Bill 3358, relating to the Oregon Progress Board, the reconsideration of technical adjustments from yesterday.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yesterday, when we did the transfer to the Department of Administrative Services, I had included the literacy survey package in that transfer and then realized that that left us with no mechanism to later address that issue. Therefore, I need you to move to reconsider the vote and make the technical adjustment to remove that policy option package.
Senator Yee now moves that we reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill 3358 to the full for reconsideration. Are there any objections? Seeing none, we'll open up 3358 for reconsideration. Ms. Lamont?
Mr. Chair, with that, I need a motion to approve the technical adjustment, which is to reduce the general fund amount from 804,470 to 704,470, and it is hand engrossed on the dash one amendment.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
It's been moved by Co-Chair Hannon that we modify the bill, House Bill 3358 on line 8, from 804,470 to 704,470. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Make a motion we move this agency to Boise, Idaho.
I'm for that.
Can we bring it a little closer to Ontario, Oregon, so that we might be able to have a few more jobs to figure out?
And with that, Mr. Chair, I need a motion to move House Bill 3358 as amended with the technical adjustment and the dash two amendments that you adopted yesterday to Ways and Means.
Representative Johnson now moves House Bill 3358 as amended with the technical adjustment today, as well as the conceptual dash two amendments by the subcommittee on the 21st to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections? Seeing and noting none.
It's a
courtesy. Yes. And Senator Yee votes yes, and so does Senator Hannon, and we do have a compliment of the House through Representatives Smith, Johnson, and myself. So ordered.
Thank you very much.
You need another motion to move the employment division to July.
If it's on one of those,
I feel magnanimous.
If it's on those one, cruise, one of those cruises, the lift is 45 degrees.
Mr. Chair, is everything else okay as far as moving it on to
phone
and all the rest of the world?
Thank you very much. Close the hearing on House Bill 3358 after having passed that through. We will now come back to the public hearing on Senate Bill 874 and House Bill 3441 as they engrossed. And when we closed this off just a few minutes ago, we had just heard from Ms. Crosley and Mr. Rich, and we'll open it back up with testimony from Mr. John Courtney. Welcome, Mr. Courtney. Last time I saw Mr. Courtney, he was on Main Street in Klamath Falls, passing buckets of water, involved in an illegal activity moving water from the lake back up to the canals where the canals were running dry and the lake was running over.
Mr. Chair, I heard that was beer. I heard that was beer.
I happened to have been there and done that, didn't stand for anything because it didn't look very good.
Okay. Green beer.
Mr. Courtney, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is John Courtney with Gelbourne Public Affairs. I just wanted to review with you just a few basic things about the unemployment insurance claimants that we have in Oregon that you may or may not know, and give you a picture of who we're seeking to serve. In Oregon, 6 out of 10 claimants on unemployment insurance make $10 an hour or less, 6 out of 10. Only 1 out of 10 make more than $15 an hour. So we're not necessarily dealing with our highest income earning people in our workforce. On average, once they make a claim on unemployment insurance, they spend almost 3 months on that claim during that claim year. That's 3 months out of the 6 months possible. During that time, they receive less than half the wage they had made prior in benefits. It's about 40% on average. And one out of four of these folks exhaust their benefits in full, which means they're going almost 6 months without a job, relying on that 40% of what they used to make ends meet, to pay the rent, pay for food, et cetera. So it's during that time that Jobs Plus is intended to help these people find a job, find a well-paying job, and move up the wage ladder. On average, Jobs Plus participants, compared to your average UI claimant, are making about $10,000 per year versus about $18,000 per year for your average claimant. So in the past, it has affected primarily the lower wage end of claimants. It gives them immediate on-the-job training instead of 3 to 6 months of spending their time looking for a job and receiving half of what they used to make. Over 65% of them found jobs within 30 days of the end of their Jobs Plus placement. Over 80% said they would choose it again. 94.6% of the employers who participated said keep the program. And on average, according to an Employment Department study, the wages of participants rose compared to those who just went into unemployment insurance claims. Their post-experience wages dropped in a statistically significant way. I believe the numbers were somewhere along the lines of $198 gain for those who went through Jobs Plus. Those who went through just a UI claim lost an average of $899 in wages.
Per year.
I believe that's per year. So if that may give you a picture of who we're dealing with. Representative Smith, in particular, you had asked for those people who are making $18 to $25 an hour, how are they dealt with, and just a little further information on how they might fit in the program. We have found from over 500 people have written letters to Senator Durfler about this program. We found in reviewing some of those letters that primarily the program's used by smaller businesses, quite a few businesses who want to expand and who have written that this was the only way they could afford to expand, taking a chance on hiring someone. It appears to have been unexpectedly an economic development piece, especially in a lot of the smaller communities. I don't imagine you'd find that on the coast as well. You'd asked a question also about the bureaucracy involved and just in support of the Employment Department and the AFS, who both worked with the program. In a survey by the Employment Department, as well as anecdotally from across the board, we found that most employers believe this is one of the least bureaucratic programs that they've ever dealt with. And one of the best things they liked about it was its simplicity. So kudos to the Employment Department on that one and AFS. We've worked very closely as sponsors of these bills before you, 874, 3441, with the Employment Department to work on the cost effectiveness of the program, but also to look at how do we best fit this into our overall economic picture. In doing that, we've cut back the subsidy, which used to be $6.50 per hour, grossed up to about $7.10 per hour. We've cut that back to a $5 per hour figure. The thinking is that on the unemployment insurance side, these are people who typically have job experience, recent job experience. They have to be on a claim. And compared to the folks who are receiving the program, on the welfare side, they're much better, in a much better position to find a job. In doing that, we've cut back the overall cost of the program by about half, a 50% cut in costs. What we've also done is working with the Employment Department and looking at the tax schedules that Ms. Crosley mentioned earlier, as we've calculated how many people we could serve in the program. This year, we would have served about 4,000 people. The program was ended after 9 months because of funding issues, but prorated out would have been about 4,000 people. The bill currently as drafted would serve about 2,450 people. It's a cut in the program, a scaling back of the program by about a third. feel pretty strongly that the program should not be cut back, that it should be kept intact at the current level that it's been operating. Not necessarily increased at this time, but just kept the same. And we're working with the Employment Department, Governor, AOI, and others to calculate what that would mean as far as amendments to the bills before you. I expect in a few days to have some answers on that and to make some recommendations too. You had asked a question about the welfare side and the funding on the welfare side. That is certainly different from both of these bills, which only handle the unemployment insurance side. The bill on the welfare side is being handled by Representative Winters and the subcommittee Ways and Means, and will be handled through the budget process, as I understand it. They're targeting funds through that process to fund that side of the program. There was a question about whether in a downturn economy, whether we can afford to have as many people participate in the program, and what would a downturn economy mean to the program. I think as we consider the program, we've found that there are many employers who can't afford to make a new hire, who did afford to make it when they had a subsidy. I think that will be even more true in a downturn economy. I think we'll find that it is an economic stabilizer in a lot of communities and for a lot of very small businesses. And I think that it will be as actively or more actively used in a downturn economy than it will in an up economy when employers are saying, we don't need the subsidy, we don't need to go through the process of considering whether we have more time than money on our hands, and more time in the sense that we could train a new employee, but we don't have the money to pay them. So I think it will thrive, and that we'll have the opportunity to put more people through in a downturn economy and train more people. Question is, will there be enough new jobs? There was a study in Texas that shows that in any economy that grows by 3%, that there is actually the creation of 23% new jobs per year in that economy, and then a scaling back of a loss of 20% jobs, a net gain of 3%. When you consider that 23% gain, you can see that in an economy like ours, there are plenty of new jobs for 4,000 people per year. Then there was another question of whether there would be abuses in a downturn economy. Again, it's something that we've surveyed. We've gone to every community and talked to every local Jobs Plus board about how employers are dealing with the program. We found that there have been very few reported abuses, but in the cases that there were, the Employment Department and Adult and Family Services are charged with policing that, working with the employer, cutting the employer off completely if they're finding that it's an abuse. And the reports that we get are that it's very rare that there's an abuse, but when there is, it's handled appropriately. So I have nothing further for the committee. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Yes, Representative Ringel is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're employed by Jeld-Wen Corporation?
I'm employed by Jeld-Wen, yes.
What I understand vaguely that Jeld-Wen is the corporation that is really the lead proponent of this program. I mean, is that fair to say?
That's true. I would say that we are in also the State Jobs Plus Advisory Board.
Of these, you said if we pass this bill, you'd project 2,450 people would be put back to work. Is that right?
That would be the number of people this program is estimated to be able to serve with the funding.
And how much of those would work at Sheldon?
Representative Ringo, Chair Butler, I have no idea, no guess. I've been asked before how do we use the program, and are we more active or less active than others? I've never tracked the number. I think that I would hope that we're as active as other employers. We encourage every employer to participate as much as they can, because it's a significant effort to train an employee who otherwise couldn't find a job. We think it's part of our community responsibility. I've also been asked, is this something that I've been asked again and again and again, why is Jeld-Wen involved with this? Is it for cheaper wages, or what is it? And I can tell you honestly, it's a civic duty that we feel it's very important to help Oregon with.
Yes, Mr. Representative Ringel.
You don't have any estimate as to how many of these employees Jeld-Wen hired last year?
I don't. No, I don't. I haven't seen the number, and I don't track it personally. I don't talk with our managers throughout Jeld-Wen to find out how many they're hiring.
John, isn't Geldwin the largest private employer in the state of Oregon?
Geldwin is, I believe, the largest private employer in the state of Oregon.
Okay. Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following along with my colleague's line of questioning, I think that would be very useful information to have. And even though you're not prepared with it today, would it be possible for you to get it and share it with the community, or with the committee? The committee, anybody you'd like.
I'll make an attempt to do that, yes. I believe that I'll be able to get that information from the Employment Department.
You wouldn't track it internally?
No, we don't track it internally. No, we have not tracked it internally.
I think in all fairness, I think that some of the Geldwin people have assisted with the Jobs Plus statewide program, and that's why they have an active interest in it. It's less self-serving than it is, as John indicated, more community-driven. Mr. Wendt is very, very motivated in the Jobs First attempt to get people off of the rolls and back into active employment so that families can be healthier throughout, wherever you'll see it, one of the Geldwin companies. Yes, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I have the great privilege of serving on a board with him, and so I know what you say is true. And bluntly, I would be interested in the numbers to debunk any malicious stories that Geldwin is a principal beneficiary of this program. So I don't see this in a negative way at all. I'm interested in getting out ahead of any adverse or malicious comments that are made about the company's use of the program.
Okay. We'll see what we can do to find those numbers, Representative Johnson, Chair. Butler, I can tell you that I'm quite certain, without knowing the numbers at all, but with knowing the efforts that we've put into being the proponents for this program, that we spent quite a bit more money on being proponents than we have on any wage subsidies.
I don't doubt that for a second.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Pond.
Sorry, I was out for a few minutes, but we've already had the discussion. But when I was in between sessions, in between my 96th session, when I came back, I was the director of our local Commission on Children and Families. And we had a young woman who had a single mother with two children who we hired in this program, did not have any job skills. And we were able to teach her to run the computer, and she went on to a better job.
Good.
So, seen it work.
Well, and I think that probably is a response to what Representative Smith had asked earlier, why it seemed like that the public sector seemed to be a great beneficiary of these folks. First of all, if they're getting $10 an hour under the old program, 6 plus of it was being compensated in part by the Jobs Plus, but also they would have the time, energy, and the positions to train them in as a clerk, three typist, or whatever, and have them move through the process and gain those job skills. And I know that it's anecdotal, and I know I've said it before, but we just, and Madera County is one of those six counties that went early on with the Jobs Plus program and had a tremendous success with that early on, because, and it seemed like, and I don't know, maybe Johnny would like to respond to this, but it seemed like that the easiest ones to get back into the employment and into the workplace and into good jobs may have been the first beneficiaries of the program. And I've heard this comment made that maybe we don't have as many good people out there that are looking for work. And I'd like you to help us debunk that just a little bit.
Yeah, Chair Butler, I would think that there is definitely on the welfare side, I would say that from everything we understand from the caseload is that the people who are coming through the program on that side would tend to be harder to serve compared to where they were in the past, maybe a little bit harder to train. That's why we think that it's important to keep the subsidy at that level on that side. On the other side, I don't know if there has been a change in the quality of the people that are coming through the program and their ability to match up skills. But again, we're hoping that this program is used for people who really need some training, where the employer is making that trade-off, an investment of time and heart and all the things that make a good mentor in the workplace in exchange for some compensation, so that they're not less competitive with their competitors who are going out and finding just the cream of the crop in the community. We've found there are a lot of employers that believe this is one of their civic duties to sort of reach out in the same manner that, you know, in the days of old that we'd reach out to our neighbors and ask them to come help us work on the farm when they didn't have enough work on theirs or enough income to support their families. So that's the general philosophy of it. I did want to mention, I've been asked before, there's a company that I'd like to make you aware of. It's called Higher Calling. It's a staffing company. 1 year ago, Dick Wendt personally, not Gerald Wendt in any way, purchased this company. The company is has 8 offices around the state. They're a typical temporary agency. And the intent of purchasing it was to try to be a little more active in the actual placement of people in the workforce, not only in Jobs Plus, but across the board, to have a little more hands-on activity and experience in what it takes to actually help people move up the ladder and into jobs. I'm told, and Ms. Crosley has made me aware, that in the past year, Higher Calling is the top user of, beyond goodwill, of Jobs Plus. Which I think may cause some alarm to some at first glance, but until you understand how the staffing companies work, what they do is they work in the same way that the employment department does, in that they actually contact employers, recruit employers to participate in the program, then make the placement, and then they pass the subsidy through. They retain none of the subsidy, and all the subsidy inures to the benefit of the employers in those cases. So just for clarification on that, in case you
had it. What's the name of the company, John?
The name of it is Higher Calling, H-I-R-E, Calling.
Higher Calling.
Higher Calling.
Such as going on to our great reward, the great Higher Calling.
It's no accident. The name of the company is no accident and the intent of its activities. We actually took a hard look at making it a nonprofit, but found that that was very difficult to do under federal nonprofit laws. In an industry that's active with for-profit entities, so at this point it's operating as a for-profit.
And they do hire a lot of Jobs Plus then?
They place quite a few Jobs Plus people.
So they're really, are they treating them as temporaries or are they actually hiring them out? You know?
Typically in the temporary industry what happens is the hire is made by the employer through a temporary agency. And it's the temporary agency's employee at that time.
Okay.
They're placed out, and typically, that I'm told the average is that they're placed for 3 months before they're hired on full time. And I think the idea is that the employer gets a chance to try them out.
So, Representative Johnson, that might skew the results of the overall, recognizing that within the last year, Mr. Wendt personally may have purchased a company who is a high user of the program.
Chair Butler.
By placement.
Right, by placing with third parties to make sure, again, that's like John says, it's no accident that it's called Higher Calling, such as the greater reward. It's eleemosynary, if I can use that word, eleemosynary approach.
Anybody that can use penultimate can use eleemosynary.
Okay, all right.
I need a dictionary. I think we have changed the rules. I think if it's a word, I need to look up the dictionary.
I agree.
Two bucks.
I got the word. I got the word from Representative Johnson.
All right, Representative. Oh, I'm kidding.
I'm not. Damn.
Representative Johnson, so that I don't have to run and get a dictionary, you're going to tell me what it means.
Charitable.
Charitable.
I thought you said
terrible.
Oh, really? It's a terrible
business. Okay, Representative Butler, now you're making me feel.
No, that's fine. Ever since I heard Representative Johnson use the word, I wanted to use it.
Second thought, maybe
I'll have
Representative Johnson pay too, because she's
going to put that in the form of a motion in all seconds. You pass that to the
fake
news there.
Oh, dear.
I guess I'm with you. Any questions further for Mr. Courtney? John, we appreciate your sense of humor and being with us today, being able to share this other information. Why don't we go ahead and schedule a revisitation of House Bill 3441 and Senate Bill 874
for Thursday, and then perhaps by then we'll have some additional information, both as to the status of where we're at the state level, and then where we're at with regard to higher calling and other of the Geldwin companies, if we could. If there is no further business at this time, we'll go ahead and gather listeners to a close and go along.